You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 617.5, the last Record Store Day podcast that we're going to do, probably. And I am here with my regular Record Store Podcast commentator slash podcaster slash host, Tricky Ricky. Tricky Ricky, good to have you back again, man. What's happening?
It's felt like it's been way too long. I'm glad to be back. Got some good stuff to talk about this week.
Well, I'm glad to have you back, Ricky. And as you know, Ricky, there was a long-lost episode that never made it to air, and that is totally my fault, and I have to apologize. What happened was I was really busy that week, so I downloaded the episode, and then I uploaded it to – I emailed – I record the episode on one podcast, and I mix it on one computer and mix it on another computer for a long, boring reason that I can tell you if you really care about it after the show is over. So anyway, I emailed it to myself. And then about 2 weeks later, I deleted a bunch of crap from my computer. And then I'm like, well, actually, I didn't even think it through, but it's up in the cloud, right? But then about 2 weeks later, my inbox was full. And so I just deleted random crap from my Google Drive. And of course, I deleted the long lost episode. So sadly, Ricky, there's a long lost episode that never made it to air, and the people will miss out on our genius and insightful commentary. So sorry for wasting your time. But here we are, Ricky, to make it up. This one will post tonight. On November 28, 2022.
You know, I just feel good about, like, I was wondering, like, where did that go? Well, at least the mystery solved, so I'm glad to be back.
So anyway, Ricky and I always talk about Record Store Day, which we're both big time record collectors, and we're going to talk about it very briefly this time. But for the past three or four times, our whole spiel has been like, well, Record Store Day is cool in general, but it's kind of boring this time. And honestly, this past Record Store Day, Black Friday, was pretty similar, a relatively uninspired list.
Yeah.
I did do Record Store Day, but I actually went to a whole bunch of record stores that did. The big thing now, and it almost seems to be equaling Record Store Day proper, is a lot of record stores will just bring in a whole bunch of rare stuff and mark a bunch of stuff down and do some discounts and not bring in the official Record Store Day stuff. And I usually go first to normal Record Store Day at Electric Avenue in Westchester, and then I go to like Jupiter Records and Good Boy and Sit and Spin in Delaware and Philly and around those areas. But this time the list just was not that special. And so anyway, the point being, and we'll talk about that in a second, is this is probably going to be the last, quote, Record Store Day podcast, just because Ricky and I just keep saying, it wasn't that special. So that's not that interesting after a while. If Record Store Day is super cool, then we'll talk about Record Store Day again. But until then, every 6 months or so, Ricky and I are just going to get together and just talk about general record collecting. Ricky, I assume that you didn't even venture out for Record Store Day this year.
No, and you know, like I've said on the podcast before, I don't typically do Record Store Day Black Friday. I just don't think that the list is usually that good. I've gotten stuff. I actually ordered something. I usually like kind of splurge on a record on Black Friday Record Store Day, like online, and doing like the antithesis of what it's supposed to be. But the lists usually aren't that strong, and I don't know. Like the only thing that even sort of like piqued my interest for a second was the Mass Intruder album repress, but I have it, so I just didn't go after it, and I didn't need it. So, and it really wasn't that much out there. I don't know about you.
Yeah, there was really only two or three things that I was interested in at all. I wanted the Dead Milkmen Metaphysical Graffiti reissue, which has the whole album remastered, and actually they took out the extended spoken word interludes, which honestly, like, the first time you hear an album, an extended spoken word interlude might be interesting, but after like the third time you're like, I don't care about this, but like even like 20 seconds is way too long for it, you know. So they took all those out and put them on a separate disc. I was somewhat interested in the Joe Strummer live record, except for the Joe Strummer thing. It's just been so lazy in that there's so much unreleased rare and semi-rare Joe Strummer stuff they could put to vinyl. And instead, they're like, here's an acoustic Joe Strummer show that someone uploaded on YouTube. It's like, wow. Like, I've got three amazing Joe Strummer bootlegs that are full band that are awesome. As I've said before, the Streetcore B-sides, there's like seven incredible Streetcore B-sides. Besides Joe Strummer and the full band doing Blitzkrieg Bop, doing Pressure Drop, doing Junko Partner, doing one other cool cover. I can't remember what it was. They do another punk cover. I'll look it up while we're talking. They could press all of that to vinyl, and they just kind of don't. And it just seems kind of lazy to me. I mean, maybe there's something I'm missing, but I just think they could do a better job. So anyways, I was somewhat interested in the Joe Strummer live record, even though it's an acoustic record. I'm not that interested in acoustic records. And the David Bowie thing I was kind of interested in, and the Iggy Pop thing I was kind of interested in. Except for the Iggy Pop, it's just him singing, like, French songs. And it's like, do I want to spend $40 on Iggy singing French songs? Like, not really, honestly. The David Bowie thing, David Bowie records always are, they always make a million of them, and so you can always get them for way cheaper after Record Store Day. So the only two things that I really wanted was Joe Strummer and the Dead Milkmen. And I really did want the Dead Milkmen, and I said, either I'll get the Joe Strummer or I won't. So what I did is I decided that the day of, I was going to go to Jupiter Records for Record Store Day and sit and spin some other places and, like, just do the deals and the rare stuff there. And so I did what you're really not supposed to do, but I just went online and I bought Dead Milkmen. And I said to myself, well, if I come across Joe Strummer, I'll get it, and if not, then I won't. And so I actually feel real bad. A couple of days later, I actually went to Electric Avenue Records just to see what was left over. And they had like two Dead Milkmen and like five Joe Strummers. It's like,
oh, you're kidding.
I'm not honestly, and this is probably a good thing anymore, Record Store Day, like, nothing's hard to get, which is probably good, honestly. I mean, you don't have to wait in line, which is kind of fun, but also kind of not fun when there's nothing that thrilling, you know?
Well, yeah, the counts are so high these days.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't know what else to tell you, but I mean I mean my days of getting in line at midnight are over, I think. Like,
oh really?
I think so, yeah. I don't need to do that. You know what, the flippers, like the flippers thing is like they nothing that we all know the cycle now. We've been doing this, this next year will be my 10th Record Store Day, and it'll be like I'll see it on Discogs or eBay for the same price, or maybe like a buck or two more.
Yeah.
Like, not even a week later, like a few days later, if I really want it. So,
but then
I don't know.
The question is, though, aren't we supposed to get out there and support record stores? Isn't that the point of Record Store Day?
Yeah, but they've been gouging us for a few years now. Like,
well, is the Record Store gouging you, or is Record Store Day gouging you?
Oh, it's Record Store Day for sure. But
yeah.
But at the same time, we go to record stores. I'm true. At Amoeba. I know you did a whole LA SoCal run of different stores. You went to Radiation, I know. Like, I'm in there. I don't go a ton because I will be broke, but I go all the time. And if I don't get a record, I'll get like, you know, plastic sleeves or inner or outer or like record cleaning stuff. So yeah, like I don't feel guilty about that, but I'm sorry. Like I think that Offspring album that I got in April for the April Record Store Day, that was like $40. I've listened to it twice, you know?
Yeah. COVID, but all, like, I definitely agree that I think Record Store Day is gouging, and that COVID has quite literally driven up the price of records.
Yeah.
I think it was Atlantic or one of the majors issued a press release that said the prices of our records are going to go up in 2023, which is kind of weird that they would do that, honestly. But I guess it wasn't intended for general audiences; it was intended for distributors. But that being said, is like, Ricky, single LPs were $40 and $50 at Record Store Day this time around, you know?
Yeah, and for that I can get like, you know, so I was able to get, we'll talk about what records we got recently. I was able to get one of my top 7-inch Grail for $50.
Oh, I'm interested in what that is, but don't tell me yet. Before we get into that, Ricky, let's briefly just, I was out in LA, you live in the LA area. You live in LA or the LA area, Ricky?
I'm in LA County, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So let's briefly talk about some cool LA record stores and maybe some to avoid. I'll let you kick it off and then I'll chime in. I was out there, I hit up about 15 stores. So go ahead, Ricky, tell me which are your favorites and maybe which are the ones to avoid.
Okay, so the absolute best is Amoeba Hollywood.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, Amoeba Hollywood is one of those famous record stores in the world for a reason. It rocks. It rocks.
Yeah. I was there. I talked about this with you and Sam like a year or two ago, but I was there on the day on opening day. It was really great. What else is great? I mean, it's not LA technically, but Radiation is in Fullerton and it's worth the drive. That place rules. I get more grills there than anywhere else.
Radiation is crazy, and that he gets in so much rare. I don't know where he gets that stuff. He gets in so many rare things. I like Radiation a lot. He gets a lot of cool stuff, and you can get some deals, but for the most things at Radiation, you're going to pay for it. Like, you're not going to get a Black Flag Damage original press for $30. You're going to pay $200, you know, for it, which is that's the price. But like, he gets cool stuff, but he knows what he gets. You know what I mean? Whereas Amoeba. Amoeba, they get, punk-wise, there's a lot of cool stuff on Amoeba, a lot of cool punk stuff. They get less, like, crazy punk stuff, and you have to compete with more people to get it. But at Amoeba, still, some things slip through the cracks. I actually got some real good crack slippers, if you will, at Amoeba. Just if the people don't know, so at Amoeba Hollywood, there's the new bin up front, but they actually have two other new bins that I'm sure people totally miss, because that's where I got all the coolest stuff. Way in the back, there's a new bin, which I think is technically newer than the stuff up front, and then sometimes, if you go into the store and go to the side, they'll have records kind of on the ground in these little cardboard boxes. Those stuff have not been filtered to the front either. Both of those spots, I got some killer, killer stuff.
Yeah, and then also, here's a pro tip for anyone that goes to Amoeba Hollywood, at least. If you go to, like, the desk in the middle of the store before you walk down the stairs, there is a box of the collectible stuff before they put them on the walls. And I've gotten some amazing...
Where's that at?
You walk in, you go down the ramp. You miss it all the time. I only found out about it this year. What you do is you go past, like, the punk section, and you'll see, like, there's this, like, kind of help desk or, like, a black
belt. Right, black on the desk. Left. So if you
walk on the left.
There's
usually one bin that is full of stuff they're about to put on the wall, so you can dig through it before they do that.
Good pro tip, Ricky. Pro tip.
There's also the Grail section of Radiation. I have found some amazing stuff in there.
When you say the Grail section, do you mean the New Arrivals, which also has expensive stuff? Or if the listeners have never been, Radiation is an awesome store, but it is cramped. If you go into Radiation, there's literally records covering pretty much every square inch. There's three aisles, and they're super tight, and there's a million records on each side. So he's got the quote normal used ones. You walk in, they're on your left, and it kind of wraps around like a snake. Then if you walk in to your right, he's got the New Arrivals, which has quote normal used records, but also some quote holy grails. Then if like to the left, like by the counter and going down the counter, he's got the more expensive used 12 inches, like in boxes. They're actually kind of hard to get to because they're so filled up, they're so tight. But then he's also got holy grail stuff on the wall. So what are you referring to, Rick?
I'm referring to the boxes right to the right of the register. There's 7 inches. There's regular boxes. I'm not kidding. I saw original press. I've seen original pressings of what's that Bad Religion album? The second one, Into the
Unknown or something.
Into the Unknown. Like, I've seen original pressings. Like, they get that specific in that store. And keep in mind, if you haven't been there, it's like 90% punk, 5% new wave, 5% metal. I mean, it's all. That's all it is.
Percentage wise, it's probably the punkest store in America. It probably is, honestly.
Yeah, and it's in a very unassuming little strip mall. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
There's also I got to give a shout out to this one other place that I've been going to. I used to not go to them because they pissed me off. But when I was a kid, there's CD Trader in Tarzana, and it's a pretty just like in terms of genre, it's pretty mainstream, but great CD selection. But they've had a pretty good punk section as well. I've gotten I have a promo copy of Leave Home with Carbata Not Glue on it that I found in there. And they usually have had Velvet Underground and Nico original with the banana on it. They've had I saw Original Damage for $200 up there, like on their wall. That place is really cool. And then we got to talk about Headline Records too, on Melrose in Hollywood.
One of the more interesting stores in LA.
Yeah, that's also pure punk, but they also do, like, you know, there's a whole t-shirt section and CDs all sorts of stuff. So they're not really into like the vintage collectible. They're just kind of like a record store, you know?
Headline is so weird because he's got the shirts hanging like from the ceiling and the almost like if you go to like a carnival or whatever and you like try to like win, you know, the crap, like they've got it like hanging behind the counter. Like his t-shirts are like, if you buy a t-shirt, you have to get like this pole and he like pulls it down from the ceiling. And like,
yeah,
all the shirts are totally bootleg. But the weird thing was, I didn't go this time. I was there last time I was in LA. I went in, I'm looking, and like this young lady comes in and she's like, do you have any, she's like, do you have any Galze shirts? And he's like, no. She's like, oh, all right, then I'll take a Cox Sparrow shirt and a Dickie shirt. Like, almost like you would walk in like a supermarket and say, I need a pound of rice. I need two gallons. It was, she like walked in like with a shopping list of shirts that like usually you see a cool shirt. You're like, oh, I think I'll get that shirt. Or like you kind of want a Black Flag shirt or something. But she walked in like, oh, I need a Cox Sparrow shirt, a Discharge. It was so weird that he like just pulled them down. But also like he doesn't have a ton of records, honestly. But like you said, it's mostly like if you want the new release punk records, or even more so the new reissues, like new Ramones reissues, new whatever reissues, he's got that. It's a really odd store, frankly. It actually almost like reminds me of a Mexican bodega, in that like the way like all the shelves are high and there's a bunch of stuff stacked all over, and he's got kind of that like that gray concrete floor, you know. It's a really odd shop, frankly.
Ricky. Yes, I know. You can actually, that's still on YouTube. I don't go there a lot. But sometimes if I'm around there every once in a while, I'll kind of just walk in and see what's there. In terms of other record stores here, I mean, there's also Freak Beat in Sherman Oaks. It's small, but it's worth checking out. I've gotten a few things from there. What annoys me is like these smaller stores that are just general record stores, they don't have like their own, they mix punk and like classic rock together. And but Freak Beat has always, like, what have I gotten there? Sometimes they have some decent grails. Like if you want, I remember seeing the original Beatles Baby Butcher album there. It's just kind of a tiny spot. And then, I mean, if we're going to shit talk one, store, Atomic Records in, I think it's, is that Burbank? I forget. I was just treated really badly there, so I just don't go back.
You told me to go there.
No, I didn't.
Oh, no?
No.
Maybe someone else did, because I actually didn't go, just because it wasn't kind of where I was headed towards.
Yeah, I mean, everyone has to understand, if you don't live in LA, like, LA is super spread out, and it's a gigantic, gigantic county.
It really is,
So, I mean, there's still parts I've never been to, and I've lived here my whole life. So I'm trying to think of any other record stores. I mean, there's also Gimme Gimme. There's, you know, if you go into like Eagle Rock, I'm not Eagle Rock, Echo Park, there are some in there. I know there used to be Origami. I forgot what it's called now. But there,
have you been to Toxic Toast?
I have. That's Long Beach.
What do you think of Toxic Toast?
It was interesting. I went there for a Pairs show. It was that Pairs was headlining and Fireburn was playing too. And I went in just to check it out, and it's like a venue / record store. And I think they go to like the owner, I think, goes to like Japan every once in a while, gets all these crazy rare like Japanese pressings and stuff. It's not bad for a punk. It's mostly punk from what I remember. I've only been once. Were you able to make it there?
Yeah, I did. The reason I went there is, didn't our a long time ago punk news writer Armando, didn't he used to work there or something?
I think so. I know he knew the owner or something like that.
Yeah. So I think he used to work there. I'm not sure. I thought it was a way bigger store. It's a pretty small store, actually. They had some cool stuff in there, but like it was like pretty like. They had like a Japanese press of the first Madness record, but it was like $75. And it's like, well, this is cool, but do I need to spend $75 for a Madness record just because it was pressed in Japan when I get a normal one for like 20 or 25? You know what I mean? So I got a couple of cool Ramones. I got the last two Ramones record store day items that I didn't have, the Sun Dragon Sessions and Live at the Roxy, I think it is. Uh-huh. Nobody has this, but he had like five of them each for some reason, which I thought was weird. And so I got that. And so he had a lot of interesting stuff from Japan. But like, and it was cool. I'm not trash talking. It was an all right store, but it was just, like, everything was priced. Like, sometimes you're at a record store and you're like, wow, $15. I got to buy this now because it's $15. Everything there is priced, and that, I could put it back. You know what I mean?
I think the only thing I got, I think I did get something there, and I got an Asbestos Records pressing of All Killer No Filler by Sum 41.
Well, there you go.
Because I couldn't find it anywhere, but and Asbestos Records pressings, once they sell out online, they're hard to find after that. So it's like I'm still looking for their pressing of Destruction by Definition by the Suicide Machines. Like that one is impossible to find. So I just snagged it. But it's a fun and it was a cool show. Like the venue is actually it's pretty nice. But I think at the time they didn't have like a venue quote unquote permit, I think. So the show ended like at like 8 or something like that. So they had to cut it pretty short. But
did you ever go to Fingerprints down in Long Beach or Long Beach area?
No. What's that other one I went to? Oh, I went to Vinyl Solution in Huntington Beach. And
that was the one I wanted to go to that I asked somebody that like what person I knew was always, oh, I go to this record, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, man, I want to check your place out. But I couldn't remember the name of it. And then like the person that acted like they didn't know what I was talking about.
Yeah.
What a jackass. Man, so how is that place?
So it's also small, but it's also like it's probably like 70% punk stuff. I already had an original press of it, but I went down there. I got it was a first press, original press of London Calling. It was also a promo copy. And then, but they also had Star Fucking Hipsters, the Alternative Tentacles one. Is that Until We're Dead?
It's the second one. Yes.
So they had that, and I was shocked because they wanted $100 for it, and I looked on Discogs and go, actually, that's not unreasonable.
No. All SFH stuff is super expensive now. Well, Dumpster might not be, but no. Never Rest in Peace, which is the second one. That's the Alternative Tentacles one.
Yeah,
that one is. So let's see what Dumpster to the Grave is worth these days. $50, man. Yeah. So.
And then also they had, I think it was like a UK import. It was a yellow pressed vinyl of Road to Ruin by the Ramones. And it was from back in the day. That was also very tempting, but I think I just got something close to that. Not yellow, but so that. Oh, and then also, you know what that was? I don't know if you remember this, John, but like in 2015 or 2016? I went down there because there was a Secret Leftover Crack show being played there. And
was that the Jesse Michaels one or was that a different one?
No, that was – I missed that one. I was so pissed I missed that.
I told you to go. You should go, Ricky. And you're like, I don't know if I can make it.
No, I'll tell – I actually have a good reason. I'll tell you why when we're done recording. So it was – Homesick Abortions opened and Leftover Crack played. For some reason, Alec was not at that show. They had what's his name from Neighborhood Brats on bass, but that was really cool.
What year is that?
It was 2015 or 2016, I think.
It could have been that he might have quit the band temporarily, or maybe he couldn't tour at that time, or maybe it might have even been that time period when he was put on temporary leave from the band for punching someone for trying to steal merch. There's a Leftover Crack story where they were playing a show in California, and some kid grabbed a box and tried to run away, and Alec chased after him and grabbed him and punched him. And so he was suspended from the band for like 3 shows or whatever, which annoyed the rest of the band because then they had to play with someone that didn't really know how to play the songs. So
listen, the show was fun. It was one of those fun secret shows. Okay, I'm looking at my the picture. I posted it April 12th, 2016. So
yeah, could be any one of those things, you know.
Yeah, but you can find plenty of record stores in LA. It's a big town, and there's usually good stuff.
Two lists I'm going to mention. Ricky, have you ever been to Record Safari?
No, I've been wanting to go there. Seeing it pop up on Instagram, I'm like, ugh, I should get there at some point.
A really cool building. Really cool, also lots of really cool old Hollywood mansions around there too, like 1910, 1920, 1930. Well, not 1910, like 1930, 1940, that kind of stuff. I'll be very brief because their wall was really cool, and also the stuff on their wall was very reasonably priced. If you want like a grail off the wall, then that's the place to get it. Also, their New Arrivals was killer. Surprisingly, even though their New Arrivals was killer, their normal used records was like not interesting. It was just totally picked over, but the New Arrivals was killer. So definitely check out Record Safari sometime. The other one that I was going to mention was, oh crap, who was it? It was, Ricky, I think it's a newish one. Have you ever been to High Fidelity?
I've heard about it. I've not been there.
Honestly, yeah? one of the best record stores I hit when I was out there. Great prices, really cool stuff. Maybe I just got there on a really good day because a lot of the stuff I bought probably came from the same collection. But I was getting Cures for $20, Susie Sue's for $20. Just a killer record store. Great prices and cool stuff. And definitely check out the dollar. One of the few places that has a really good dollar bin. So check out the dollar bin too.
Okay, yeah. So next time it's in downtown. So next time I'm down there, I'm going to have to do that.
So Ricky, let's get to record collecting. Did you say you just got like a holy grail off a wall somewhere or something like that? I forgot already.
So this has been a long, very long journey. I've been after this 7-inch for, I think it was on my Discogs list for about 6 years. And it was always sort of like on the back burner for me to steal. And it would come up on there every once in a while, but like, it would be like VG plus for like $100. I'm like, no, not doing that. And then I reached out and then I saw someone on Instagram who's literally, I think his Instagram is literally the CRS collection. He only posts like choking victim or like leftover crack related stuff.
You know who that guy is?
No, I don't.
That guy is probably the world's biggest like choking victim / leftover crack fan. Yeah. Basically, like that's his band. And I guess I won't get too specific, but he's got crazy test presses and like there's record collectors like me and Ricky, and then there's the people that go the step beyond, and there's the people that go the step beyond that. That guy is the kind of guy that has gone the step beyond that. You know what I mean? So that guy is like a maniac. Like I'm sure when I was in Netherlands, there was this guy that had literally I don't even think he was trying to sell him. He had every press of every Rolling Stones record ever. Like if you wanted the Philippine 1978 press of Sticky Fingers, he's got it. Well, this guy is the leftover crack version of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's got test presses. He's got pressing plates. He's got acetates. He's got everything.
Yeah. I mean, he has a choking victim pillow. I mean, it's crazy. So
Ricky, would you want a choking victim pillow? Would you want that?
No, I wouldn't.
Would you want choking victim to release their long lost gestating live record?
Oh, so badly. I think you and I were posting about that when you posted the story, and then I'm like, and then I think he, I was really hoping Fat would put that out, but I guess that's not happening.
Well, yeah, you know how it is with leftover crack and choking victim and record labels. They don't seem to get along. So
I mean, I know I was really hoping for that because I was at two of those shows. So all right. Anyway, so I asked this guy, I go, how did you find this? How did you get it in such good condition?
What was it? You haven't said what it was yet, or you?
I know. I'm leading up to it. So
go ahead.
And he's like, oh, you got to do this and that. And I don't know how I should say this because it was sort of like through the band a little bit.
I know what you're talking about.
Okay. So I don't want to like, you know, do that. But anyway, I got Indie K's only vinyl release, the Indie K 7-inch, and it was $50. And I was so stoked.
That's a deal, dude. You can sell that for like $200 these days.
I know. So it came a little dusty. It was clearly kept in like a garage or something like that. I cleaned it off. It sounds spectacular. I have been wanting this for so long. This was my 7-inch grail. Like I really, really, really wanted this. And it plays great. So, and I don't think we'll be getting any Indie K stuff on vinyl for probably a very long time or ever.
I would bet that you'll ever see any Indie K stuff on vinyl. You know?
Yeah, and Especially and also early Morning Glory too. I don't think
I don't. Ezra has been quite clear that he's pretty much over music. Maybe he'll change his mind, but I don't think we're going to see anything in that side at all, you know, ever.
I don't even need him to tour. I just want the whole world's watching on vinyl. That's it.
I hear you. It raises the question is, does an artist, we'll use another example. So Minor Threat, well, actually Minor Threat basically doesn't do t-shirts, although I think you can buy a Minor Threat t-shirt through Jeff Nelson or something. Like there is one official Minor Threat t-shirt through one of the Minor Threat guys, which the other guys are fine with. So there's many Minor Threat bootleg shirts, and a lot of them are made in like not Malaysia, in like China or Pakistan, you know what I mean? Like not in ethical condition scenarios. So does Minor Threat owe their fans? Do they owe it to their fans to make t-shirts? A, so they get the money that it's just some jackass that's, you know, pressing them on Pakistani t-shirts or whatever, but also to make sure that the product is an ethical product and not, you know, some scummy bootleg thing. Does an artist actually owe the fans that? That's the question, Ricky. And I'm not saying there's one answer or the other. I'm saying it's a very tough question.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it probably depends on the case. Like, I think there's a lot of people that want it, but, you know, I mean, Minor Threat and even Fugazi, like, they had their own, like, ethos. Like, I'm not surprised, like, they don't have their own, like, t-shirts. All that was sort of either bootlegged or that people just made it themselves.
Okay, how about another example? Danzig. There are literally more bootleg Danzig and Samhain records than there are official ones, literally, like, quantity-wise.
Yeah.
Does Danzig owe the fans to release actual real versions of those records, which he could do with the snap of his fingers, but he just won't do it, Ricky. He just won't do it.
I mean,
except for he will, he's reissuing 5, 6, 7, and 8. So why not reissue? He owns the Samhain records. So why not reissue those? You know,
I think they should. I think at the same time you have a bad, like, pressing plant issue still. But I mean, I think you could do it. I mean, at the same time, I think artists get kind of, especially in our scene, they tend to get a little bit, self-conscious about if they think they're, you know, quote unquote selling out or gouging their fans. So I don't know. I'd say do it but don't, like, you know, don't gouge the fans and don't, and make it somewhat collectible too. Don't do like a 500,000 pressing like Adele did or something like that.
I'm fine with, like, Alternative Tentacles. They don't do limited records hardly at all. So
yeah, I know.
Which is cool. If you want it, you can get it. The blowback is, ironically, that actually sometimes makes albums and bands less desirable or less hip. Like, if anybody can get it, no one wants it. Whereas if you make it arbitrarily limited, everyone wants it. The best example of that is any modern hardcore band where bands like Drain or what's the band with, like, the devils, like, drawn, the demons drawn on the cover? Like, everyone, maybe that is Drain. Like, there's so many hardcore bands right now that people are like spending like $100-$150 on new records just because no one else can get it, you know? Not Drain. Oh, not Gorge. What's that band, Ricky? Not Gorge. Not Drain.
It's not Turnstile, right?
Yeah. That band barely qualifies as hardcore. Not that I care, but I just think they're cheesy. Oh, my God. They their logo has, like, spikes all over it, like every band now these days. Oh, I'll think of it. Damn.
I don't know.
Not Gorge. Not Drain. They just broke up, but they had, like, a super long tour before they broke up. Oh. Crap. They're known for, like, expensive merch. I'll look it up, but anyways.
Okay.
I'll give a direct answer. I'm saying, unless you're, like, Minor Threat or Fugazi, you definitely, if there's a demand for it, which some bands clearly have a demand, if there's a demand for it, you should produce, you should repress records so the fans can get it. And you should produce t-shirts, because if you don't produce the t-shirts, then some bootlegger's going to make it. Better you, the artist, gets the money than some creepy bootlegger on some, shirts made in some sweatshop. And if you really, really don't want the money and you want to be a cool person, and I think you're cool if you keep the money. I think you're totally entitled to keep the money. But if you feel, I guess, iffy about keeping the money, then just set up some kind of charity and funnel the money into the charity or something, you know.
And also, I don't want to hear those same artists complain that they're not making enough money.
I don't think those guys do, though, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Why can't I think of that band? And it's like a one-syllable name. It's like Drain, but it's not. It's like, oh, man. Damn it. Gulch. That was it. Gulch.
Oh, okay.
Like people were spending like $150, $200 on like Gulch like t-shirts and stuff. It was crazy. Anyways,
What have you gotten?
Okay, let's see. I was out in California, out in the LA area, and some of the cool stuff that I got was the following. Ricky, I did terrible. Oh, I'll tell you actually what I really got recently. This one not even out in California. So Ween records are super hard to find. I think Ween they do repress them like every 3 or 4 years, but there's such a demand for them that as soon as they put them up for sale, they sell out immediately. So Ween probably could do a better job of pressing their records, and I think if they cared a little bit more, they probably would, but I think they care, but just a little bit. But at least I'm thankful that they repress stuff. The point being is, recently, Good Boy Records down in Delaware, that guy got like a ton of Ween records. Before I got there, so he got a grip of Ween records, right? And he posted them on Instagram. Some dude literally drove from Virginia to Delaware, like literally like an 8-hour drive to buy Ween records. That guy got there before me, and he beat me to the punch on a lot of them, which honestly, if you're willing to drive 8 hours to buy Ween records or any kind of record, you deserve to beat me on the punch. You like, if you're that kid, I'd rather you have them than me.
That's super dedication.
The point being is I did get some cool records. I got the Mollusk, I got 12 Golden Country Hits, I got Chocolate and Cheese, and I got the Pod, and I was super psyched. I got it for a good price, because repressed Ween records are now like $100 to $200, which is crazy. Anyways, I got it for less than that. Not cheap, not super cheap, but definitely cheap-ish, reasonable. And I got them, and I'm so thrilled I did, because the sound quality is amazing on those records. Although Ween records might be kind of expensive, it's cool that the sound quality is like top notch and really, really, really cool. Oh, and so that's one cool thing I got. Ricky, here's another thing that I got that is super weird. And actually, I talked about this on like the last Punk News podcast, but I'll go into more detail here. So a little while ago, there was this person that was selling a ton of like just promotional stuff on eBay. A lot of promotional records of all kinds, like Madonna promo records, but also like Gang of Four promo records, but also like Clash promo records, but also like Pet Shop Boys promo records. So It appeared to come from like a record executive or somebody like that, you know, somebody that like worked in the industry that just got all these promo records just because they worked in the industry. They had, Ricky, something that I'd never seen before, and I snatched it up. I don't know what it is. It's a copy of Dead Kennedy's Too Drunk to Fuck, but it's a one-sided 7-inch single, and the word fuck is bleeped from it, and so it says on the record face, Too Drunk to Fuck. Let me look right now. It's this thing is like crazy. It's some sort of weird, I don't know if it's a bootleg or if it actually is like a promo thing. Too Drunk to Fuck beeped version. And it looks, I mean, it's white label, but it's got printing on it. And you would say this is just some weird bootleg thing, but it was pressed by Bob Ross Music Service, which is a pressing plant-ass company that specifically made records to be playable on the radio. And every other record in the collection was a real promo or pre-release type thing. So I'm thinking it's legit, but what is this? You know,
weird.
It's one sided. The other side is just flat, and it's a white label. It says Too Drunk to Fuck beep version, Dead Kennedys, produced by Geza X. And then around the circle, it says Bob Ross Music Service. And it's got like the address and everything. So if it was a bootleg, it probably wouldn't say that, because the Bob Ross Music Service, who's not the same as the painter Bob Ross, was a legitimate company that would do stuff for labels to make like specialty pre-release records. So, but there's no quote record of this record anywhere. Pretty crazy, right?
That's nuts. Yeah.
And so I was talking on the pod, like I was thinking about like emailing Alternative Technicals and say, hey, what do you think this is? But I'm scared that like Jello will ask for it if he doesn't have one, you know. And if he asks, I'll give it to him. But I kind of don't want to give it up, you know.
You know, that reminds me of one thing that I saw in at Radiation. It was a 7-inch of the. I forget which Dead Kennedy songs it had on it, but it was a 7-inch from like somewhere in South America, and it was the cover was the Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables cover. I'd never seen anything like it.
But it was a 7-inch?
Yes.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, so I those things are floating around.
Honestly, there actually are a lot of cool South American and Nigerian pressed records. Of course, there's a lot of cool Nigerian music and that kind of stuff. But I'm saying American or UK records pressed in South America and Nigeria, there's a lot of like really interesting ones. Like I've got a Yellow Man record that was pressed in Nigeria. Ooh. That is like totally different than any, like it didn't exist anywhere else. And it's got like a totally unique cover. I also have a South American Rolling Stones live, No Security press in South America. Like the track listing is like it's the same songs, but they're all like in all different order. And you say, well, that's just a bootleg, but it's not a bootleg. They're officially licensed in those countries, but for whatever reason, in those countries, they would like to do significant changes towards it. You know, so it's just kind of weird, you know.
That is weird. Yeah, I don't think I have anything like that. No.
So I mean, if you're a Ricky, I'm looking at what you're talking about right now. Here it is. It's Kill the Poor with the cover of the first album on it.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
So that's kind of neat.
Yeah, but I'd never seen it. Just saw it on the wall at Radiation. So
only about $40. Not that big of a deal, you know. But actually, the B-side is different than the normal version. The normal version of Kill the Poor, the B-side is In Sight. But on this version that you're talking about, Ricky, the B-side is Viva Las Vegas.
That's right. That's what I remember him telling me. Right.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Ricky, do you collect that kind of stuff? Kind of like that kind of stuff is always – for me, it's always kind of – I'm always on the fence because I like to collect music more than records with certain exceptions. But and so I have both of those songs, so I don't need to collect that. But it is kind of a neat, weird artifact, you know?
So I was so close to getting it. Yeah. And Dead Kennedys are one of those bands where, like, I will kind of do that. I think I have, like, three different copies of Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables.
Ricky, at my latest jaunt down to Radiation Records, I got a copy of Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables. First rejected mix press, $20 with the poster.
The orange one? Was it orange?
No, it was the one before that. The orange is the first good one. For Fresh Fruit and Rotting Vegetables, there's three mixes now. The original mix, and I actually still haven't listened to it, and I probably should. Apparently, it's sped up and sounds terrible. So the Dead Kennedys made IRS. Who was it? Cherry Red. Used the good mix. And so you can, according to Jello, and I agree 100%, if you want the best sounding version of Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables, there's a few that sound identical. Look on the matrix, and it should say Porky's Prime Cut. And if it says Porky's Prime Cut, that means this guy they would call Porky, who was a literal master record cutter, just like someone might be a master butcher or a master carpenter. This guy was a master record cutter, and so he's famously known for making the best sounding records at that time. So if you want the best version of Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables, look on the inner groove and it should say Porky's Prime Cut. But if you want the first version, which sounds crappy and terrible but paradoxically is very expensive, then the very first one is in black, and that's it, does not say Porky's Prime Cut. The first USA press, Ricky, like you say, is all in red, which I also have as well, which I bought at Jupiter Records like 10 years ago. Take that, Ricky. Take that.
Interesting. Well, does that copy, that first one, have Police Truck on it too?
Good question. Great question, Ricky. Do you mean the USA version or the UK one?
The UK one that you're talking about with the Porky's one.
Well, the Porky's Prime Cut is the second UK. There's actually like Dead Kennedys have like tons and tons and tons of presses, right?
Yeah.
And I never knew this. Like I did know that, like on the back famously, that there was the picture of like that folk band or whatever, and then the Dead Kennedys got in trouble for using it. So then the next press they like cut off their heads. Yeah. But then on the next press they like did like some other funny picture. So there's different pictures on the back, but also I never realized this. If you look at the dots on different, like on the back, you know, there's dots. If you look at the dots, they're different colors on different pressings. I never knew that.
I didn't know that either. I mean, what I love about my orange cover one is I still have it's still in the shrink with the hype sticker.
Wow, that's cool.
Which I'm really, really happy with. So
the very, very first one does not in the UK, which is Cherry Red, does not have Police Truck.
Okay. So now to get back to the main question about that 7-inch though, I was about to get it, but I found a couple things that I wanted so much more. Like I got I think it was like a repress of the Nerves One Way Ticket compilation, which I really wanted because I know I'm not going to get that 7-inch, the Hanging on the Telephone 7-inch anytime soon. And then also I found a Suicide Commandos record. Record, and I found it there, and it was a good price, so I went for those two. And then after that, I'm like, okay, no more. We're cutting you off. We're done with that. But so I've been looking for that Suicide Commandos record forever, and I happened to find it in his the Grail boxes Radiation. So that was a really, really good find.
Suicide Commandos is kind of a forgotten band, honestly. How does she get a little bit more due than they do?
Well, you know how I got into them? Because I didn't even know they existed until I reviewed Roll Credits by Nightbirds for Punk News.
Oh, and did they reference Suicide Commandos? Oh, did they cover Suicide Commandos?
They cover I Need a Torch. And yeah, that song, it was so ahead of its time. So that's why I got that record.
Ricky, are you sad Nightbirds are breaking up?
I'm sad for selfish reasons, the reasoning, at least it's like amicable. At least it's like I can understand what Brian was coming from. I can empathize with that. And I was talking about this in, how was this, the comments, or was it Navel Gazing? But I'm like, this is one of those very few bands that didn't have like a rut album, you know, where like the whole discography is stellar. Like, I still listen to The Other Side of Darkness regularly. And they're so good live. I got to see them twice. I was hoping for another full length, but I'm really happy with what they gave us, especially Mutiny at Muscle Beach was so good, especially when it first came out. Like, that was a monster record. So I'm thankful for them. I'm grateful that they did it. I'm glad they had the run that they did. And they're kind of ending at their peak, which is probably a good thing. I wouldn't be surprised if we got some sort of reunion down the road, though.
I think the writing's been on the wall a long time. Like, I actually thought Roll Credits is actually probably my favorite Nightbirds record. But like it took them forever to put that out, and it was like 8 songs, which I thought was cool, honestly. Like, all killer, no filler. But then since then, they've done like what, maybe 5 shows or something, or 6 shows.
Yeah.
So I think the writing's been on the wall a long time. That being said, I would not be surprised at a reunion show within 3 to 4 years, to tell you the truth, you know? So.
Yeah, I mean, and they were, it was always hard for them. It always seemed like it was hard for them to get out on the West Coast. So, like, I first saw them at Punk Rock Bowling, and then they did a show with Neighborhood Brats out here that I got to see, which was cool. I'm glad I got to see them in a non-festival setting. I agree, that record was all killer, no filler. But the one thing I'm hoping for, I really hope they do Fresh Kills Volume 2. I hope they get a vinyl pressing of that.
Yeah.
Like, they could do that easily. Well, not easily, but they could do it.
Honestly, Ricky, I'm going to say that's probably not going to happen because maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like Nightbirds is none of the members' priority right now.
No.
And so, like, why do that? You know what I mean? Like putting out a record, it's a fairly expensive endeavor no matter what. And it's a lot of hassle, and it can be very thankless, you know?
Yeah. And also, they're not going to tour it, obviously. So, yeah. So that would just be my one thing that I hope they would do before they have, you know, after their live show hasn't happened yet. Right.
No, you're going to fly out for it.
No, I was tweeting.
Why I'm not, like, Ricky? Why not?
Because I can't do that. I think I don't even know when it is, but I need to. I was tweeting. I'm like, someone please video this. Someone live stream this. Someone get this on camera, so we can at least get this one last time. And
December 30. I gotta put that on my calendar because I have tickets, but I forgot to mark down the day. So I'm putting it on my calendar right now.
Oh, dude, are you gonna do a review of it?
Most likely, yes, probably, yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna read that then for sure.
Ricky, you should fly on out, man. We can have a party. You can stay for New Year's.
Well, we'll have to see.
All right, Ricky, should we do one last record each?
Yeah. Why don't you go first this time?
Okay. I was going to ask you, why don't you go first? Okay, let's see here. You know, Ricky, I came on this episode totally unprepared.
Me too.
Because I normally I would think, oh, what should I talk about? And then I just didn't think about anything. I'm trying to think what I got. I got some cool stuff at Record Store Day. I'm trying to pull out the pile now, so I'm going to keep vamping while I flip through some cool stuff that I got. Oh, well, actually, I'm just going to rip through a couple of cool things. Ricky Down at Radiation Records, I got the Ludes record, American Wino, signed by all the band members.
Oh, cool.
$10, man. Can't beat that. I got Discharge's Massacre Divine. Not a great record, but the last Discharge record that I don't have from the original run of the band. Let's see here. I got I got Citizen Fish. Oh, I'll tell you what I got real cool. But I got Citizen Fish, Millennium Madness. I got the Ramones live albums. This is kind of cool, Ricky. I got Joey Ramone's You Know album, which was released in 2012, went just before vinyl kind of re-exploded, so it's really hard to get. I got it at Amoeba Records for a very reasonable price. Cool thing about Amoeba is if a record isn't totally mint, they'll put like light wear on it and they'll like heavily mark it down. Yeah. And I've yet to see any wear on my light wear records from Amoeba. You know, I got Bauhaus's Go Away White at Amoeba. Which is normally like a $200 record for like $50 because it said light wear on it. And I can't find the light wear, Ricky. I've looked. I can't find it. I can't find it. But this is something that I got that's really cool. Let me just grab another stash here and then we'll wrap it. Oh, actually, I'm going to mention two records and then one last record, Ricky. And then we'll, I got this at Record Safari. I got a Germs GI, Ricky, for a very, very reasonable price. Way less than Discogs. Again, light wear, but I can't find the wear. But this is cool, man. Like, honestly, and actually, Ricky, do you have to go or do you have about 10 minutes?
I have 10 minutes.
So let's talk about this real briefly, and then I'll talk about my last choice. This is something so right now records are more expensive than they have ever been, literally, both new records as well as used punk records and any records. Like Fleetwood Mac, rumors up to $20, $25, $30, $35, you know. So records are more expensive than they've ever been. And so right now, Minor Threat records, Misfits records are way more expensive than they've ever been. Walk Among Us is $800. And so if you want a Walk Among Us, if you want a first Minor Threat 7-inch, you can just buy it. You can go to Discogs and buy it, like, for, was it, like, $3,000 now for the first Minor Threat 7-inch or whatever, or $1,000 or whatever. Like, you can just buy it. So, Ricky, is there any point to just buying a Minor Threat 7-inch for $1,000? I mean, anybody can do it if you got $1,000. So is there any fun to that? Is there any point to that? And for me, it was fun to get the Germs. Like, I love the Germs. Germs are not my favorite band, but I love the Germs a lot. If I wanted Germs GI, I could just go buy one for $150 on Discogs. Like, is there any fun to that? Is that fun? Is that record collecting, or what is that? You know what I mean? Because that's big. Yeah. A lot of people are doing that right now. A lot of people.
Yeah, I think people are seeing them as investments now, and that's what's driving the prices up.
Bad idea.
Very bad idea. What else? I mean, it's $1,000 for a Minor Threat or Misfits. I mean, I don't know if what it is about Misfits fan, like diehard fans, but I keep seeing that blog that Discogs posts, and consistently every month they say the most like it, Cool Cough, and you know, Horror Business or whatever is
consistent. Cool Cough is up to like $15,000, isn't it?
Yeah, it always gets in like the top 10 records sold that month on Discogs. Now, in terms of the hunt that you're talking about, I have a list of records that I don't want to pay shipping for. So I'm always just looking out for them at record stores. But some of them, like, you know, I still am looking for a good copy of Blondie's first record not on Chrysalis, on private stock. I'm not going to find that in a store anytime soon. That's going to be a Discogs buy at some point. So it really depends on what I'm looking for.
The first record wasn't on Chrysalis. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, there's one that's before. There's a pressing before that's on private. It's called the record's called record label. It's called Private Stock. Yeah. Hmm. So I didn't know that. Yeah. So
is the record different at all, or is the record itself the same?
I think the actual recording I think is the same. Don't hold me to that. Hmm. But the label on the actual vinyl is different. I remember I was trying to find a few years ago, I was trying to find Milo Goes to College. I know I'm not getting an original press, like that's not going to happen, But I didn't get look for it online anytime soon. I eventually found it at Amoeba at Amoeba. So it was fine. I found a repress. Happy to do that. So I hope that answered the question.
Well, I'll put in my two cents. It is like it just not like I guess I don't get the appeal. I mean, I sort of did like. Yeah, I don't really get the appeal of just spending 10 grand or 5 grand or a grand on a record when you could buy it any time for that. Like, yeah. Where's the satisfaction? Where's the fun? You know, and honestly, just if I did that, I think I'd feel kind of stupid, honestly. I think I'd feel like a sucker. You know what I mean? It's like, well, oh, great. Also, I just,
if I'm dropping that kind of coin on a record, I'd like to see it first.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, so that answers that question. All right, Ricky, two last things, and I'll do my last thing, and then you can do your last thing.
Sure.
I talked about this artist a while ago on the podcast, and I'm just going to talk about it again because I've been listening to her. There's this artist called Susan Reed. And if you watch Blade Runner, Ricky, have you ever seen Blade Runner?
I saw the first one, second one.
So do you remember the scene where there's like a girl in kabuki makeup like on a giant mega screen? It's like one of the first scenes of the movie, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
That's Susan Reed. Susan Reed briefly was in a new wave band. It was called Susan Reed and the Orientals, which is not a name that would pass muster today, but that was the name of the band. And they put out two EPs. One is just called Susan Reed and the Orientals, and the other is also called Susan Reed and the Orientals. I never noticed that. And they're both really, really good. The first one is like excellent new wave just crossing over to punk, which honestly sounds a lot like a lot of punk bands today that kind of do the power pop punk new wave thing. I was a big fan of Posers, and honestly the record reminds me a lot of the band Posers. The second one is actually kind of almost Kraftwerkian, and it's like electronic to a degree, but also I think it might be like, I don't say anything out of school, I almost feel like there's some kind of Scientology connection on the second one, because it's got two songs, and one song is called Psychology, and it's all about how psychiatrists are evil and they try to control your mind to make you feel bad when you don't actually feel bad, which is a thing that Scientologists often talk about. I don't know if there's a connection there or not. At any rate, both records are super cool and people should check them out. That's one of the funds of record collecting. It's basically like you can go online and just buy stuff, but like at the record store you see something that just looks cool for $3, $2, $5, you buy it and it turns out that's one of your favorite records of all time. So I mean, there's just something very fun about that. But the other thing, Ricky, that I'm going to talk about is Record Store Day, but true Record Store Day. As listeners know, for Ricky and me, Record Store Day is every day. And yeah. I was down at Sit and Spin Records about a month ago, and I'm flipping through the fancy bin, which is actually usually pretty reasonably priced stuff. And I came across a $30 record that said Culture Shock on it. Of course, there's many bands called Culture Shock, but we're talking about the Dick Lucas Culture Shock, which is the band between Subhumans and Citizen Fish and my favorite Dick Lucas band. And it was just like a white sleeve, and it had like, you know, just printer paper, like pasted to it that said Culture Shock. And I thought it was like a bootleg. I'm like, what is it? Is this a bootleg? And Colin, who runs it, like, that's Culture Shock, Dick Lucas band. I'm like, yeah, I know who Dick Lucas band is. Anyway, so I bought it. Ricky, test press. I got a test press of the first Dick Lucas band, first Culture Shock record, which is why people should go to their record store day, the record store, and get the cool stuff and check it out, because you can buy it on eBay, but it's going to be, or Discogs, it's going to be $500 to $1,000. And also, you might not even know it exists. You go to the record store, you're going to find cool stuff, and you're going to find something that you didn't even know existed, and it's a lot of fun. So there's my find, Ricky.
Yeah, there you go. So I'll name a few, and then we'll get into the one that I think we I'm kind of surprised we haven't talked about yet. So I'll get to that one.
I know what you mean. You mean the repress of the record for Space Jam that everybody wants?
No. So I'll just name. So the first one I'll name, Bad Time Records, killing it this year.
True, absolutely true.
Killing it. I know we're both Catbite fans. I was a huge fan of the Suicide Machine split with Coquettish this year. Another release that I got from them was the Coastal Collapse split with the Upfucks and Noise Complaint. And Kyle White from Public Surfaces and the Upfucks, very good record. Really, really into that one, especially the Upfucks side. And then I got a few blasts from the 77, 80. I got the Stiff Little Fingers album, original press, the live album Hanks, which is just if you like this band, stellar set list. Like, it's so good. And then also I got I found God Bless the Star Jets by the Star Jets.
Ricky, what is this band, the Star Jets, that you, I've never heard of this band. What is this band?
They are a 77, 79 band. They are, I think they're Irish, and they're like a little too pop to be punk, but a little too punk to be pop. The way I found them was Billy Joe Armstrong did that solo cover album a couple years ago. He covered War Stories by the Star Jets, which is a fucking jam. Like, this is one of those albums that won't get, they haven't even repressed the CD since like the 90s. The CD is like almost more expensive than the record. And I gotta tell you, you can find the whole thing on YouTube. It's worth listening to. It's really catchy. War Stories, School Days, like the, and I watched the Stiff Little Fingers documentary of like a month or two ago, and they talked about how the Star Jets actually opened for them back in the day. So they're kind of in that weird, they're not like the Jam, but they're kind of in that the Jam situation where like they were like punk enough, but and I think they're still around too, but. This is a really, really cool, fun, poppy punk record that I recommend people check out. It's a lost gem. It's super underrated. And then also, I'll just mention, I got the first, the most limited press, the bluish one with the signed artwork of the new of Free LSD by Off.
Oh, yeah. Actually, let's talk about that real quick, Ricky.
Yeah.
What did you think of the new Off record?
Loved it.
I liked it a lot too. I loved it. I love the sci-fi stuff that they put on it. I almost wish they had more like sci-fi whacked out stuff on it, but I did think it was a great record.
Yeah, you know, I forgot who, maybe I commented this on the review or something, but I'm like, I think they couldn't do like Wasted Years Part 2. It just wasn't gonna fly. And
no, definitely
and,
not.
And clearly when the album was still called Watermelon, like that clearly this is the direction they were going to go in. So I was happy to see that and I was excited. But I got to tell you, even with the new rhythm section, like they still kick ass. Like this record was totally blew me away. I was worried that they were a little worried that they weren't going to go super weird and they needed to. So, and this is the band to do it, but it's really good. And it's been on constant rotation for me. I'm just looking at what else I got. Oh, I should just mention this one band because they're not getting enough attention. But so what's her name? Ava from Rats in the Wall.
Mm-hmm.
She and some other people from the SoCal punk scene. Whitney from Homesick Abortions and Ursula. They're in a band. It's like, believe it or not, Ava created a pop punk band. And they put out an EP earlier this year that I totally missed. I managed to get one, to get a copy on gray vinyl, and they're called No Plan. It's just a self-titled. It's like four or five songs. It's pretty good. I was surprised by it. I was taken aback. I'm like, this is actually really good. It's if you liked, it reminded me of like a little bit more abrasive Lippies, if you recall that band. So that's worth checking out. It comes on gray vinyl. I think that was Indecision Records and Program Skate and Sound. They did that down there. And then the final one, which I'm just assuming you got this, John. I wanted to talk about Endless Possibilities, a tribute to Jack Terrycloth.
I did get that. Yes, yes.
So I got the color version from the Kickstarter. Did you as well?
Yes, I did.
I thought it was very well done. Everything, the tribute was nice. I think the covers were overall very good. Jeff Rosenstock obviously shines on this one. Mine came with just sort of like this blackish, reddish marble disc and then just black for the second disc. I didn't know if anything was different for you.
No, mine's the same that way, yes.
Okay. Have you listened to it yet?
I have. I dig it. Of course, Catbite. I love Catbite's contribution. Yeah. Of course, Hallie Bullet is on it. I thought it was interesting that they focused on kind. What was interesting to me is that this, like, War on the Front, one of the greatest bands of all time, a multifaceted band. Here they kind of focused on the, I guess, folk. Like, War on the Front is not a folk punk band, but the kind of the folk punk or gypsy punk or kind of the more wacky shambolic aspect of the band, which is interesting. Whereas for me, my favorite part of the band is kind of the suave 1920s, 1930s aspect, the crooner aspect, you know. So yeah. I think it's interesting how so many different people can take so many different things from the band because they are so multifaceted, clever, interesting, and unique. So yeah, I thought it was real well done. I thought it was cool, and also I was surprised in that the bands selected, and the way that what most of the bands did was not what I was expecting at all, which was a interesting, pleasant surprise. But also leaves room for way more tributes. So yeah. Also, I did think it was pretty interesting that they opened with a bunch of Sticks and Stones covers, which I thought was kind of cool. I always wondered, should they have done an Erotic Impulse track? But no, I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I was hoping. You know, I mean, this might be controversial, but my favorite World Inferno album is This Pecked Funeral.
That is a controversial stance.
Yeah, is it?
I mean, I think it's a great album. I don't know if a lot of World Inferno fans would agree with you. I dig the album a lot. It's not my favorite, but I think it's interesting that it is your favorite.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, my favorite song is on there, the Taken Down a Peg track. Like, I was hoping for a cover of that because I think that is such a massive song. But no, is it Red Eyed Soul's probably the favorite?
Red Eyed Soul or Just the Best Party? Because between Just the Best Party and Red Eyed Soul, when the band put out Just the Best Party, they were still very much a cult band that, like, not a whole lot of people outside of Brooklyn liked. Yeah. And then they put out Red Eyed Soul, which was kind of their quantum leap. And so they got a whole bunch of more fans. So people kind of forget about it, but there's actually almost kind of a division between Just the Best Party fans and Red Eyed Soul fans. Because Just the Best Party is a little bit more punkish, where Red Eyed Soul is a bit more soulish. And I actually remember I was at I was at this place. It's not even there anymore. It was on Ricky in San Francisco, Hayden Asbury. What's the one that runs east to west? Is that Asbury? It's Asbury, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I was at that place on Asbury, right near the Amoeba Records, San Francisco, and it was this tiny burlesque club that World Inferno was playing, like super tiny. And some dude was just talking to me, and he the guy's talking about how he did cocaine, which I'm like, why is the guy telling me that he does cocaine? Anyways, he was talking about how he didn't like Red Eyed Soul because he thought it made the band sound like an '80s band. Which, with reference to Cats Are Not Lucky Creatures, it does kind of sound like a modern English or even a Madness song. But I love Red Eyed Soul the most, I think. But there was a division between those two albums with fans at the time.
Interesting. Well, yeah, I mean, I love that's also another band that doesn't really have any sort of bad album.
No, they're all different from each other, and they're all interesting. Yeah. I guess you could say Red Eyed Soul and Addicted to Bad Ideas are somewhat similar sounding, but then again, Addicted to Bad Ideas is a concept album, so that makes it unique in and of itself. I love the band, I love all the albums, and I love how all the albums are kind of different than each other, although they're all kind of connected, you know, the whole World Inferno aesthetic, if you will.
Right, yeah.
So, R.I.P. Jack Terrycloth, man. Gone too soon. Yep. That really is kind of a bummer because I mean, the band definitely shifted significantly after Lucky Strano left the band. But I'm just sad that the band definitely could have had a massive comeback and another great album, many great albums, but they really could have, like, had, you know, just like Bowie, you know, went up and down, Sinatra went up and down. I feel sad that World Inferno never got to do their third act or their fourth act, you know, but hey, man, it happens. It sucks, you know.
Yeah, and yeah, but you know what? We got a lot out of that band, so
that's true. Well, all right then. On that happy note, we're gonna wrap up this episode. Ricky, you and I will be back again in about 5 or 6 months. We're gonna talk some records again, and if Records Were Days pop in 6 months, we'll talk about that. But if not, we'll just talk about records. So, Ricky, always a pleasure, and thanks for coming on, dude.
Thanks so much, John. Appreciate it.
And all right, well, sounds good, Ricky. Always great talking to you. And listeners, we'll be back real soon. This episode's gone up tonight, Ricky, and I'm not going to lose it. So listeners, see you soon.